Holy cow, the years just keep sliding by, don't they? How is it March already? But it's not too late to change your life this year. If you're still not in a job you love, stop messing around. Go to mycomputercareer.edu and take the free career evaluation today. You could start your new life as an information technology professional in as little as 4 months, even with zero IT experience. Helping people start an IT career is what we do. Many of our graduates could do little more than turn their computers on and off before they started. Attend classes on campus or live online just twice a week to get the skills and certifications you'll need to start your new career. More than just a school, My Computer Career helps you get into the industry by working with hundreds of employers that hire our students. My Computer Career is nationally accredited and financial aid is available to those who qualify, including the GI Bill. Classes start soon, so go take the free career evaluation today at mycomputercareer.edu. It's not rocket science, it's mycomputercareer.edu. The First Take Your Take podcast is presented by Capital One. This is Banking Reimagined. First Take Your Take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, ESPN News, Sirius XM, Channel 80. I'm Jason Fitz. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. We want you guys to chime in on the show. Penzo Performance Line. Drew Brees went to Instagram today. That's the breaking news. He let us know that he is coming back. He's going to make another run at it, which we all know means it's going to be with the Saints. He's already told us that. So Drew Brees back to the Saints. The question is, where does that mean the Saints rank in the NFC? That's what we want your thoughts on. Where do the Saints rank in the NFC? 888-SAY-ESPN 888-729-3776. There's obviously a ripple effect to this for the quarterback position across the NFL also. You can tweet me at Jason Fitz, and let's get to Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. To do that, we're going to head over to the Shell Penzoa Performance Line, where we're joined by ESPN Saints reporter Mike Triplett. Mike, thanks for joining us. Obviously, this was the breaking news today. So how surprised were you at the timing of the announcement from Drew?
I wasn't very surprised. Actually, I had kind of marked this date on my calendar as a day to check in. He's supposed to give it about a month, and he gave it about 24 days. I think he had a vacation. I think the kids had a 3-day weekend back to school today, and it made perfect sense right before the combine. I think this is what we expected he was going to do, but it was important for him to make this decision before the Saints have some pretty big free agent decisions to make, especially with their other quarterbacks.
Any indication on what kind of deal it will be for Drew to stay there?
Not exactly. I mean, he is an unrestricted free agent, so they have to take care of that. But I don't expect it to be contentious. He was in the exact same boat 2 years ago, and he did not play the maximize his value, threatened to hit the open market card. He said, look, I'm not playing anywhere else. I'm not taking calls from other teams. And 2 years ago, he signed a 2-year, $50 million deal, which was slightly below market value. He's outside of the top 10 right now at that market value. And the most important thing that he's done for the Saints is it only had 1 year of guaranteed salary. He's agreed to sort of be paid 1 year at a time at this stage of his career, which is sort of an underrated hometown discount that they're not going to get locked in if he suffers some sort of a career-ending injury.
We're talking to ESPN Saints reporter Mike Triplett on the Shell Penzo Performance Line. You mentioned the other quarterbacks on the roster. So what is the domino effect in your mind for the Saints next?
Well, in a perfect world, they'd love to keep all three guys, Teddy Bridgewater and Taysom Hill. But Sean Payton said on First Take last month that he thinks that's unrealistic. And I think that means Teddy Bridgewater is the odd guy out here. Last year they were able to keep him at $7.25 million plus incentives because there wasn't a huge market for Bridgewater. Only the Miami Dolphins offered him a starting job. But then this year he went 5-0 as Breeze's replacement. Really proved to the league that he is a starting quarterback in this league. And there's a lot more openings this year, a lot more dominoes that we can't wait to see what's going to happen at the quarterback position. So I think there'll be some lucrative options for Bridgewater and some legitimate starting opportunities. So I don't think the Saints are going to be able to pay him. It'll be much easier for them to keep Taysom Hill, who's a restricted free agent, and they just have to tag him with a 1-year deal somewhere, $4 to $5 million, and they'll pretty much lock him down with that.
ESPN Saints reporter Mike Triplett joining us on First Take, Your Take. I'm Jason Fitz. So we've been asking everybody, and I'll ask you, Mike, now that we know Drew Brees is coming back, where do the Saints rank in the NFC in your mind?
Well, they're right there in that same mix. I mean, unfortunately, they're in the deep conference, and we've seen how that's worked out for them the last couple years. They probably have to rank behind the 49ers right now, but I like them just as much as the Packers and the Vikings and the Seahawks, maybe a resurgence from the Rams. But look, this is a team that went 13-3 2 years in a row, the last 2 years. They've won more regular season games than any team in the NFL over the last 3 years. And they had 14 guys either go to the Pro Bowl or an All-Pro team. It's a loaded roster from top to bottom. So I like their chances just about as well as any other team in the NFC.
Follow him on Twitter at Mike Triplett. Mike, we appreciate your expertise. Thanks for hanging out with us.
Anytime.
All right, so that's some Straight Talk. Straight Talk Wireless, everything for less, only at Walmart. Getting that from Mike. Follow him because he's going to be a great way to keep your eye on what happens with Teddy Bridgewater coming up. Now, we've been asking you guys on Your Take, where do the Saints rank in the NFC with Drew Brees coming back? And I'm a little stunned by this one, so we're going to take the call. Eddie in Wisconsin, you've got a shocking Your Take on this. Where do you have the Saints going at this point with Brees coming back?
I figured this would be a little bit of a hot take. I mean, I don't think they're ahead of the Niners. I don't think they're ahead of the Seahawks. I think the NFC North is pretty stacked. The Bears are going to be better next year, including that. But I don't think they get out of the division against the Falcons. I think the Falcons last year, I know they were projected to do better than what they played, but the Falcons played, they beat the Saints once. They beat the Niners. They played against some good teams. And, you know, there were some bad bounces that the Falcons took. I think they're going to be better next year.
Okay, and that is actually not as hot takey as I thought when you think about how good the Falcons were going into the back half of the season. I'll give you a little credit for that. But again, back-to-back years at 13-3. Come on now. The Saints, to me, are still going to be the favorite in that division. We want to keep getting your take. You can tweet me at Jason Fitz, or you can call 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Brees is back. Where do the Saints rank in the NFC? We'll get some more of your take worked in, but First Take today had a big conversation in the NBA, and it was about L.A. As LeBron and Kawhi are both going down the stretch. Again, this is a stretch run where you've got a lot of games compacted into a short amount of time for the NBA. So Stephen A., Max, they broke down who's going to have the bigger impact on their team. Is it LeBron or Kawhi?
The fact of the matter is, the other day, Lou Williams came off the bench and dropped 35. Montrezl Harrell came off the bench and dropped 24. Marcus Morris has been acquired by them, and he's been inserted into the mix. Paul George goes down with a hamstring injury, but he's expected to be back. So collectively speaking, Kawhi Leonard may not be asked to do all those things that he's fully capable of doing in order for the Clippers to be successful. Meanwhile, everything is riding on the shoulders of LeBron James for the Los Angeles Lakers. If LeBron James doesn't bring his A game, the Lakers ain't going to the finals. It's that simple. They need him desperately. Other than Anthony Davis, who do you have definitively that you can rely upon? We just sat here over a week ago and lamented the fact that because they didn't acquire Derrick Rose before the free trading deadline, because they didn't acquire somebody like Dennis Schroeder, they have now been left to depend on Rajon Rondo to come into the game when LeBron James is out so they can continue to run their offense with fluidity. That's what you need. You're hoping that Danny Green shows up and doesn't appear moving forward to have lost a step. You know, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, what is he going to give you?
But Stephen, Kyle, what Kuzma, if they lock up the one seed?
Well,
what
again,
if the Lakers lock up the one seed? Then LeBron can take his foot off the pedal.
Well, you can say he can take his foot off the pedal, but what I'm saying is, as it pertains to this question, will LeBron have a bigger impact than Kawhi? I think he will, because he has to. There's no, you can literally get away with Kawhi Leonard being above average, yeah, and that's it, and you're fine.
Clippers are jacking their position.
No, you can't. Not if Paul George.
I'm talking about for the regular season. I'm talking about moving forward for the rest of the season before the playoffs begin. You literally need LeBron James to be LeBron James moving forward. You have to. You have no choice.
I disagree with that. In fact, the Lakers have a better record. They've been excellent against good teams. They've been excellent. They've just been excellent. And meantime, Paul George is dealing with nagging injuries. Like, again, the same leg. In fact, I think the Clippers need Kawhi. But Stephen A., you once told me something Jordan said as it relates to A game. Something that Michael Jordan said about an A game. And you just mentioned that LeBron, if he doesn't bring his A game, what was that Jordan said again?
No, Jordan was in the elevator and Scottie Pippen was clapping, talking about, all right, guys, it's important. Let's go. Bring your A game. Bring your A game. Jordan's like, A game. How about bring A game? How about that? Just bring A game.
That's a great line.
Right. Bring A game. So, that's what he said.
So LeBron, so the Lakers without LeBron, it's hard for them to bring A game. That is true. And the Clippers are more capable of bringing A game without Kawhi. But you're sort of penalizing Kawhi for being on a deeper team. In fact, LeBron has a crime partner in AD, where the reason that team is as successful as they are, LeBron's playing out of his mind, no doubt about it. They have two top five players. You almost can't, it's almost impossible to have two guys as good as LeBron and AD on your team and not be a juggernaut. So yeah, LeBron has to do his part, no doubt about it. If we're talking about the entire rest of the way, what Kawhi gives you as a premium is you're going to win a championship because you have him. That's the difference. When the games mean the most, he's consistently the best player on the floor. Trot out the Greek freak. Kawhi is the best player on the floor.
Ben Simmons, Kawhi is the best player
on the floor. LeBron,
where do you get this consistency from? I love Kawhi Leonard, but bottom line is last year was the year that he did it. Where's all this consistency? You act like Kawhi Leonard has been winning 3, 4, 5 championships. He's been in the finals every year. He's done X, Y, Z. That's not the case. Kawhi Leonard won a championship when he was not even a secondary option. He was a defensive wizard, no doubt about it. So he was a finals MVP because of his defensive prowess years ago against Miami. But then came back a year, 2 years later, and Kevin Durant and OKC smoked him. He showed up against Golden State, but Ja Ja Pachulia undercut him. So he was out in game one when they had a 23-point lead in game one against a Golden State Warriors team that could explode before, at the drop of a hat and could have come back. So last year was the real year that he did it, and it was against Joel Embiid and the 76ers where he sat up there and won that game seven with that basket, and then he showed up against the Greek Freak. But you act like he's been doing this for 10 years.
Let's examine this. This is why Kawhi is underrated. This is why people mistakenly still feel that there's anyone
underrated.
Better than him, that KD was better than him when KD was healthy, that LeBron, etc. The reason he's underrated is because it's the distance traveled. He did not start where everyone else did. You know, LeBron and KD, their talent, their otherworldly generational talent, transcendent talent, was obvious from day one, right? And they hit a very high level early. Kawhi had to grind to get there. It's not as transcendent offensive talent like the other guys. So what I would tell you is, look at that Spurs series where he was the MVP of the finals. For the defense he played on LeBron, what was Kawhi, 22? He was a puppy. Stephen A., starting about in the middle of that series, he started dropping 20-something a game. Right, you know, those last couple games of those series, he was starting to, his offense was coming on, and the bottom line, he was MVP.
That has
when
nothing
you
to
look
do with
at
what
the
I said.
High-leverage games he's played in his career, when you look at the high-leverage games he's played in his career, he is consistently and increasingly, and then last year it cemented it, the guy who shows up.
ESPN Radio presented by Progressive Insurance with more than 30 coverage options. It's First Take, Your Take. I'm Jason Fitz on the ESPN Radio and the ESPN app and ESPN News. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Don't forget, we're asking you, Drew Brees is back. Where do the Saints rank in the NFC? You can chime in at Jason Fitz, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. We'll get back to some more of your take, but First Take, in the meantime, wasn't done breaking down their thoughts on the Western Conference. In fact, as they were taking a look at what the West looks like, there was a real question between Max and Stephen A. about who the wild card is that could come in and disrupt everybody. And Stephen A. with a surprising answer.
I'm going to tell you this, Max. I think the Utah Jazz are the wild card. I don't blame you for saying Houston because of what Russell Westbrook and James Harden brings to the table with small ball. And I'm a fan of Gerald Green coming off their bench. I think his athleticism and his ability to make shots at times, I think that he can do some things for them once he gets healthy. But I'm going to go with the Utah Jazz because of several elements that I don't believe the Houston Rockets have. Number one, depth. Number two, a rim protector in Rudy Gobert, who's averaging 14.6 rebounds per game and nearly two blocks. Number three, Bogdanovich, who recently won the game against Houston when he hit his three at the buzzer to win in Houston. Donovan Mitchell, we know what a stud. This brother is averaging nearly 25 a game. They're a top six ranked defense in the National Basketball Association right now, if I remember correctly. And I love to pick up a Bogdanovich with Mike Conley Jr., with the Donovan Mitchell, with the rim protector that is Rudy Gobert, et cetera, et cetera. When I look at Utah, they play defense. They play strong at home. We understand that they've got some athletes, some boys who could put the ball in the hole. You know, and obviously, if you're Houston, when everything is clicking on all cylinders, nobody can stop them. But they have to be clicking. With Utah, that's not necessarily the case because unlike Houston, they get stops. I'm not saying Houston is bad, is awful defensively, because I think that they're doing a good job defensively. And Elston Turner, who's the defensive coordinator essentially for them, I think he's doing one hell of a job and deserves some praise. It's just that so much is put on the shoulders of Russell Westbrook and James Harden. That's not how Utah plays. And that's why I think they could be a wild card, because if the players were to begin today, remember, they would be the team with home court advantage, and you'd have to go on the road to beat them, which is never easy in Utah.
Well, look, let me be dumb sports generalist guy for a second, or at least old school hero ball guy for a second. I'm glad you brought up Utah in the first place, because the default position is to talk about the two LA teams and then Houston, right? And then sometimes like Portland because of Damian Lillard. But we don't spend enough time talking about Utah and Denver, right? But there's a reason we don't spend that time talking Utah and Denver, because they don't have that singular ball handler or wing who can go get his own shot under crunch time operating at a high enough level. Now, I agree. When you look at the Jazz, you think, if Donovan Mitchell can be that guy, and maybe he can, and maybe the time is now, but my hunch is we're still about a year too early. If he ever can be that guy, we're still probably a year too early for him to do it. In other words, the reason we don't pay enough attention to the well-balanced teams is, for as much as the NBA has changed, and you said it last year about the Bucks with Antetokounmpo, who do you have operating a high enough level that can get his own shot under pressure?
Well, Max, here's the difference between you and I. Here's what I think you're missing. All of those things that you said can be very, very relevant and could assist in Utah losing games during a playoff series. But I think they could win enough games to force a game seven. And if that game seven is in Utah, now we're talking something, because you got yourself a problem. Mm-hmm. And we all know that Donovan Mitchell is big time. We know he can ball. And because you have somebody that you can give the ball offensively to, then guess what? That's somewhat of an identity. Defensively, you know what they can bring. And they've got spot up shooters. You can't leave Bogdanovich alone. You can't leave Ingles alone. Mike Conley could do some things, and you know he's a steady presence and what he does defensively because of his experience in the National Basketball Association. And he's been to the playoffs numerous times, including been to conference finals on a couple of occasions, if I remember correctly. So you got all of those things working for you. Quinn Snyder is a hell of a coach. He has proven to be a hell of a coach in the NBA, and he deserves a lot of praise, just like Malone does in Denver. But I'm telling you right now, when you look at Utah, defense, steadiness, because they got a point guard. Before it was Ricky Rubio, rather. That ain't the case. Now it's Mike Conley Jr. that's going to be there. He's a steady hand at the point guard spot. I'm just saying, when we talk sleeper, when we talk wild card, when we talk somebody that can come up from the rear and really surprise the hell out of you and find themselves in the conference finals by knocking somebody off, I think Utah is a team that can pull that off.
You know, I, Utah is almost like, I like to do a thought experiment that shows you how important it is to have MVP caliber players in the NBA, mm-hmm. is try to put together a team in your own mind that would fit under the salary cap without a top 10 player and ask yourself, could they win a championship? It almost never happens. The last time, to my mind, was Detroit, not the Bad Boys, the Chauncey Billups team, where probably no top 10 players in the starting five, but they worked so well together. They had an historically great defense, the whole thing, and they won a championship. It is so rare. Utah is like that experiment happening this year. No top 10 players, but deep and excellent and well coached.
I'm not assuming they're going to go to the finals or represent the West. I'm talking about biggest wild card who could shock the world, who could shock everybody. This is the type of team that could do that. And oh, by the way, remember what we were talking about with Philadelphia? You 25-2 at home, but you 9-19 on the road. Think about that. Juxtapose that to Utah. They're 20-5 at home, 16-13 on the road. That's a team. That's a team structure. We don't wet the bed when we go on the road. It's tougher on the road.
Same road record as the New York Knicks.
It's tougher on the road, but the bottom line is you look at them, they're above 500 on the road, and they're pretty formidable at home. That's a team.
It's First Take, Your Take on ESPN Radio. I'm Jason Fitz. Boy, you guys are fired up, so I want to get more of your take. We've been asking you, Drew Brees. That's breaking news today. Drew Brees coming back. Looks like he wants to make another run at it. We know that's going to be with the Saints. The question is, where do the Saints now rank in the NFC? We've got some varying opinions. Tweet me at Jason Fitz. You can call 888-SAY-ESPN 888-729-3776. That's what we're going to do next. I'm going to get more of your take in on where the Saints now rank in the NFC after Drew Brees has decided to come back. But first, before we do that, don't forget, every night, local police departments across America receive hundreds of calls from burglar alarms. The vast majority of the time, this is amazing, they have no idea if the alarm is real, if there's really a crime going on, or not. All the alarm company can tell them is that, quote, the motion sensor went off. That's it. Simply Safe home security is different. If there's a break-in, Simply Safe uses real video evidence to give police an eyewitness account of the crime. That means police dispatch up to 350% faster than a normal burglar alarm. You get comprehensive protection for your entire home. Outdoor cameras and doorbells alert you to anyone approaching the house. Entry motion and glass break sensors guard the inside. Plus, Simply Safe protects your home from fires, water damage, and carbon monoxide poisoning. It's 24/7 monitoring by live security professionals. You can set up your system yourself, which is important if you're like me and not good at that stuff. No tools are needed, or Simply Safe can do it for you. And it's only 50 cents a day. That's right, 50 cents a day with no contracts. It's super easy. All you have to do is visit simplysafe.com/fits. That's simplysafe.com/FITZ. You'll get free shipping and a 60-day risk-free trial. Go now. Be sure you go to simplysafe.com/fits so they know our show sent you. That's simplysafe.com/fits, F-I-T-Z. More of your thoughts on whether the Saints will rule the NFC next. First Take, Your Take on ESPN Radio. I'm Jason Fitz. First Take, Your Take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, and ESPN News. I'm Jason Fitz. We're brought to you by McDonald's. Quarter pounder with cheese made with 100% fresh beef. It's the hottest, juiciest quarter pounder yet. Only at McDonald's. I gotta stop reading about these quarter pounders. Makes me hungry every single day. I'm just saying. Every day I leave here and I just want to go through the fast food lane. That's on me. First Take, Your Take. We want your take. With Breeze back, where do the Saints rank in the NFC? Gavin in Iowa. We've heard some First Take, Gavin. I want your take. Where do the Saints rank in the NFC now?
I think they're still going to be at the top of their division. They possibly lead to the conference, and if they win that, obviously they'll go to the Super Bowl. Even if they didn't have Drew Brees, if he retired or signed with another team or something, I still think they would have made the decision because, what, they had like two or three Pro Bowl offensive linemen. They had a Pro Bowl running back in Alvin Kamara and another Pro Bowl, Michael Thomas.
Okay, Gavin, yeah. I got to ask, the world needs to know, how old are you, buddy?
11.
Oh, you rock, and that was an amazing call. I'm just telling you, Gavin, anytime you want to call into this show, we will get you through on First Take, Your Take, because that was awesome. Look at what Gavin did. Gavin just did what a bunch of adults can't do. He made his point, and he supported his point. I'm just saying, I'm all in for that, Gavin. You're the best. That's my take. And we want more of First Take, Your Take. We want more of Your Take. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. With Breeze back in town, where do the Saints rank in the NFC? We'll get more of Your Take coming up, but it's not the only topic going on right now. Obviously, there's been a lot of conversation about Myles Garrett and the issue between Myles Garrett, Mason Rudolph. We've covered it extensively on this show. Well, Jeremy Fowler went on the 6 p.m. Sports Center last night and had a report that said that this makes Myles Garrett look opportunistic, according to some of the people he's spoken to. This is a respected reporter from our end talking about this. So Stephen A. had the opportunity today to react to that report.
He looks opportunistic. That's what I take from it. If you look at Mason Rudolph screaming at Myles Garrett while they were going at it or what have you, you saw what I deduced to be the B word coming out of his mouth. You know, it wasn't the N word. I didn't see that. I didn't hear that. But you could tell he was screaming at him. He was cussing at him. That kind of stuff. Okay. Now, I don't know what to make of that. I don't know why. But the way that I look at it is that if Myles Garrett would have used the N word, usually that's an indefensible position upon which somebody outside of the black race could come at you with. All you could do is categorically and emphatically deny it. There's not really much else that you can do. So if you're Myles Garrett, you sort of insulate yourself again. And I'm not saying that he did that. I'm saying that there's no evidence that Mason Rudolph has said the N-word towards him. There's no evidence whatsoever that anybody else heard it, because they're all categorically denying they heard such a thing. The NFL investigated. The Pittsburgh Steelers investigated the situation. Nobody has deduced that Mason Rudolph used that word against Myles Garrett. So if you're Myles Garrett, and for the sake of argument here, let's just say, for example, that there are people that don't believe him, like Fowler said, and there are people out there that think he's lying about it. Clearly, Mason Rudolph said something to him, but it probably wasn't the N-word. But by using the N-word, you insulate yourself from really getting down to the nitty-gritty of exactly what was said to you, what was said about you, and why. I don't know the answer to these questions. I'm not speculating about anything, but clearly it appears to be something going on.
I think it makes it look not like he's opportunistic, Stephen A., but like he's telling the truth as far as he understands it. John Dorsey, the GM, said that Myles Garrett was making this claim immediately after the incident, right? It wasn't like, oh, why'd he wait so long? He was making this claim immediately after the incident behind the scenes. Now, he came out and said he didn't make it widely known because he didn't want to make it seem as though he's using it as an excuse for his behavior, which he describes as inexcusable. If he's asked about it after the punishment is meted out, after it's over, after he knows that Mason Rudolph's attorney was already rattling cages about, oh, lawsuit for defamation and all this stuff, what's the incentive at this point to say it, to open himself up like that? Everything is past him. I believe, based on the evidence, that Myles Garrett believes that Mason Rudolph said it. He thinks he heard something that I find hard to believe was actually said, but he thinks he heard it. And the important thing in life is to tell the truth, boys and girls, even if it's inconvenient. So Myles Garrett's asked point blank a question, and he told, as they say nowadays, his truth. It doesn't mean the truth is subjective. There is a single truth. But from his point of view, he just heard it wrong, I assume. I don't think Mason Rudolph said it. I think he heard it wrong. Read up on Myles Garrett, the kind of family he comes from, the kind of man he is, the charitable work he does. This man writes poetry in his spare time. Read up on Myles Garrett and then ask yourself, is he the kind of person? He might be. I mean, it doesn't matter. Like, I could still be wrong and he's actually just lying. I could be wrong and Mason Rudolph said it. But my best read of the situation is they don't like each other, and Myles Garrett heard something he didn't actually hear or wasn't actually said. And Stephen A., the way it makes Myles Garrett look to me at this moment, it's just honest. He's like, this is an inconvenient thing for me to say right now. Well, from his point of view, he must be thinking, but I'm being asked, I'm going to tell the truth.
Well, let me say this to you. I don't know Myles Garrett from a can of paint. I'm not trying to cast any aspersions upon him whatsoever. But let's understand a couple of things here. Number one, again, there has been an investigation on the part of the NFL, on the part of the Pittsburgh Steelers. There were other black players on that football field. Nobody heard that. Not one single person has come forward and said that they heard anything like that coming out of Mason Rudolph's mouth. Then we have to take into account this reality, Max. Let me assure you of something. As a black man, you don't confuse the N-word with something else. You don't sit up there and say, excuse me, I think I heard it, but I'm not sure. Or, you know, he thinks he heard it or whatever the case may be. Now, he either heard it or he didn't. Now, to his defense, he's emphatically stating or clearly stating, that's what Mason Rudolph said to him. I'm not calling him a liar. I don't know. Mason Rudolph has emphatically and categorically denied it. I don't know. But I do know this. It puts Mason Rudolph on a defensive and completely insulates Myles Garrett, because the bottom line is you already served your 6-game suspension. A lot of NFL players came up on this show, felt that it should have been longer. You have NFL players all over the place saying that his actions were so egregious that the punishment was not enough, that he got off relatively easy considering what he had done. If you take all those things into consideration, we have now transitioned from focusing on Myles Garrett and the swinging of the helmet to Myles Garrett and what was said to him allegedly by Mason Rudolph. And all Mason Rudolph has to go on is his name, his reputation, or whatever the case may be. He has nothing else to go on because he has been accused of something he categorically cannot disprove.
It's first take, your take, and I'll say it. I've said it before, I'll say it again. The story isn't going to go anywhere, because through it all, you're going to have players that are coming out and continuing to speak their truth, as Max said. And as all of them speak it passionately, we're not going to know anything until it takes the next step, whatever next step that is. And that next step very well could be legal action. Even then, we may still be searching for answers. I'm searching for answers from you. Drew Brees is back. So the question is, where do the Saints rank in the NFC? You've loaded the lines. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. You can also tweet me at Jason Fitz. We'll take more of your take coming up next as we get your thoughts on Brees, the Saints, where they rank in NFC, in the NFC. That's next. First Take, your take on ESPN Radio. I'm Jason Fitz. It's First Take, your take on ESPN Radio and ESPN News. I'm Jason Fitz. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. We're getting your take, 888-SAY-ESPN. With Drew Brees back, where do the Saints rank in the NFC? Greg in York, Pennsylvania. I love this answer. Greg, we've heard some First Take. What's your take on where the Saints rank?
Yeah, now, I think with Brees back, they have Kamara and they have Thompson, the offense defense, they're going to be amazing. They're going to make it to the AFC Championship game against the San Francisco 49ers. There's going to be a minute left. They'll have the lead in, and the refs are going to screw them, and they're going to lose.
Oh, that's too soon. It is too soon for Saints fans. Believe me, I still talk about the Tuck, so I get it. I get the pain. It's too soon for Saints fans. We'll keep getting your take, obviously, as we take a look at First Take. But one of the most important conversations they had on First Take today was about load management in the NBA as Max and Stephen A. tried to figure out what LeBron's future may look like for the rest of this season.
Stephen A., is it time for LeBron to consider load management?
No. And I want to be very, very clear about what my personal definition of load management is. If you are tired and I'm concerned about you, I might sit you down and say, okay, you're taking these few games off before the playoffs begins. Load management to me is the back and forth, devoid of injury and stuff like that. I don't consider, the more you hear about Kawhi Leonard and what he's enduring and how legit and serious his ailments are. Okay, I understand you managing that because day to day you might not be feeling well. Mm-hmm. That's entirely different than you feeling well, but you like, I got April and May to think about and I'm feeling absolutely fine, but I'm going to take this game off or a game off hand. I don't like that. Now, if the season's waning and we going like this, man, we got the number one seed. You need to take some time off. We need you. So guess what? You're going to rest these next few games. I don't give a damn what you said. That's not my definition of load management. That's my thing saying, excuse me, you need some rest. Take the rest, as opposed to the back and forth element. That's load management to me. And I'm never in approval of that if you are healthy. If you are healthy, it shouldn't be, oh, on Monday, I'm announcing I'm going to skip Wednesday's game, but I'll be back Thursday. If you know you're going to be back Thursday, that means you're healthy enough to play Wednesday. What the hell are you doing? I don't support that. But if you want to sit there and say, look, man, he's been playing. He only missed 2 games. He's averaging nearly 35 minutes a game, a team leading. He's in the 17th season. He ain't playing for the next 2 weeks. I'm cool with that. But that's what it needs to be, Jalen.
Max?
Look,
he should absolutely load manage. And according to your, like, we agree about how he should do it, Stephen A., but according to your reasoning, we really disagree about why. So the reason I think he should play but really limit the minutes is, you know, we showed the graphic off the top. No one's played more minutes ever except for Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Karl Malone, and neither one of them was nearly playing at the level LeBron is presently playing at still. And he has the most playoff minutes of all time. So that says, just to say nothing of that, those high-intensity minutes. So absolutely limit the minutes as much as possible.
First Take, Your Take. I'm Jason Fitz on ESPN Radio and ESPN News. We're asking you for your take. Breeze is back. Where do the Saints rank? Trent in Tampa. You've heard some First Take. Give us your take. Where do the Saints rank now?
Hey, Jason. This is Trent. I think, first of all, thanks for taking my call. They're going to take a significant drop-off, I think, only because they don't have Taysom Hill as a Swiss pocket knife to come in as a third quarterback. He's going to be a backup quarterback. He's not. I'm pretty sure the organization is not going to want him trot him out 30 snaps a game to take the hits and whatnot. So they're going to drop back a couple of wins at least.
Trent, I'll give you some credit there. That's a really smart point. I mean, if Taysom Hill is suddenly the backup quarterback, will they still use him as a utility knife? I think they will, but that does raise a curious question of what they're going to do for a backup quarterback and where it goes there. Spencer in Missouri. Spencer, thanks for calling. What's your take on where the Saints rank?
Hey, I love the show, Jason. Hey, Saints are going to be a top three pick, or a top three team. They've got the 24th pick in the draft to add another wide receiver to complement Michael Thomas, and this is a really deep draft class. My biggest area of concern is that next year we're scheduled to play the AFC West and the NFC North in addition to the NFC South. I think we've also got the Niners and Eagles thrown in there, so that could be a really tough set of opponents, but with the best offensive play caller in the game and a reinforced offensive line and a healthy defense, the Saints will be back in the NFC Championship getting screwed by the refs next year. Thanks.
That is a great call. Again, we're consistent on the ref thing, but I'll agree. We haven't even talked about strength of schedule, essentially. And when you're playing the AFC West, you are playing the Chiefs. That much matters. I'm still not sure, even as a diehard Raiders fan, how big of a threat the Raiders, the Chargers, or the Broncos present the Saints. The Saints are a better team top to bottom. But I love the point about wide receiver help. Let's remember, as Mel Kiper's mock draft is out there, go check it out on ESPN.com today. And we had that, you heard that conversation on First Take. When you continue to break down the wide receiver class, it is, according to some of the experts, the best wide receiver class we've ever seen. So yes, if you're sitting not only at the bottom of the first round, but at the bottom of the second round, the bottom of the third round, you're going to be able to find dynamic wide receivers that are expected to make an immediate and lasting impact in the NFL right away and at a high level. When you add that offensive arsenal, oh my God. I mean, there is sort of a level, but let's not sleep on the fact that if the Saints do decide that they're going to bring back Taysom Hill, that as much as we believe it's because he's the quarterback of the future, we don't know that that's really the truth. I mean, the Saints might find themselves in a very similar situation as the Steelers. Teams that have, you know, they have their quarterback, they have their older quarterback, and they have their current, but they have to figure out what their long-term looks like. Otherwise, they don't stand a chance for long-term success. What I know long-term is you need to keep hanging out on ESPN Radio. The Will Cain Show will continue to react to Drew Brees announcing he's coming back for another season. I'm Jason Fitz. As always, thanks for listening to First Take and, most importantly, giving us your take throughout the course of the day on ESPN Radio and ESPN News.